Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we open our show with an exclusive report on some asylum seekers who have been dumped onto the streets of San Diego by ICE and a local group that's trying to help them. Then we'll have a report on the border closure over the weekend and deployment of tear gas against migrants seeking to cross the U.S.-Mexican border. The first winter storm of the season is set to douse our region this week, and we'll have details. An initiative to save Julian's volunteer fire department has qualified for the ballot in an upcoming special election. And then on Green Scene, hear about a controversial sand mining project proposed on the Cottonwood Golf site in Rancho San Diego, next to a federal wildlife refuge, also near schools and homes. On our health report, hear about a romaine lettuce recall and a new treatment for peanut allergies. Learn why the county is urging holiday shoppers to check your receipts, and hear why California now has a hefty budget surplus. On Destination East County, learn about holiday happenings and other upcoming events. From Public News Service, we'll have some top national stories, including more on the confrontation at the border, why some farmers are wary of trade wars, and more. Our newsmaker interview today is with Bernard Mauricia from the Shawnee Foundation, a group that is working to help children with cancer and their families. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Starting in late October, immigration authorities have been releasing 20 to 30 migrant families a day onto the streets of San Diego. These are migrants who sought asylum at the San Diego-Tijuana border. After vetting for security risks and tagging the migrants with ankle bracelets, the Department of Homeland Security has quietly dropped these families, 50 to 70 people each day, at locations across San Diego County. These families are not provided with any resources, so the situation has left hundreds of migrants homeless on San Diego's streets, with nowhere to go and no way of getting to their final destinations. The San Diego Rapid Response Network, a coalition of human rights and service organizations, has worked with partners to set up a migrant shelter. They are responding to the needs of these vulnerable children and families by providing meals, medical care, and legal services. Appealing to the San Diego community for help, the group has launched a GoFundMe campaign to raise funds to maintain the shelter and provide necessities such as food, blankets, bedding, and portable showers. The funding will also help provide free legal representation for these families. To donate, you can visit GoFundMe.com/migrantreliefSD. A press release from the San Diego Rapid Response Network states, these families are desperately fleeing violence, suffering, and persecution in their home countries. They have braved the elements and dangerous hardships on their journey to the U.S. in search of a safer, better life. The families include an average of 1 to 2 young children, ranging from 3 months to 10 years old. Children are given items such as toys, diapers, formula, and bottles, depending on their age. Once basic needs are met, families also receive help to reunite with family members in their destination cities, often a multi-day bus trip across the country. Families also receive detailed information about their rights as asylum seekers and details on their responsibilities to immigration and customs enforcement, as well as information on court appearances in their destination cities. Core partners for the San Diego Rapid Response Network include the ACLU of San Diego and Imperial Counties, the Employee Rights Center, Jewish Family Services of San Diego, and labor organizations. For more information or to volunteer, you can visit rapidresponsesd.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
U.S. Customs and Border Patrol shut down the international border at San Ysidro in both directions on Sunday, also closing major highways, a trolley line, and pedestrian crossing into Mexico. When some members of a migrant caravan from Central America attempted to cross into the U.S., agents repelled them with tear gas. Reuters reports that children and babies were screaming after the attack. There are also eyewitness reports that a loud sound device was deployed, possibly a flashbang or a sonic weapon. The border shutdown on a busy holiday weekend also inconvenienced travelers vacationing on both sides of the border and seeking to return home. Border crossers were forced to detour and endure hours-long waits to crossings at Otay or Tecate in East County. The Twitter hashtag Migrant Caravan includes updates, photos, and videos of the confrontation on the border and the shutdown of the busiest border crossing in America. The migrants have said they are fleeing violence and death threats in nations where drug cartels have taken many lives. Most of the migrants have indicated they planned to ask for asylum at the border, a right that is protected by international law for anybody fleeing persecution, although countries can vet those seeking asylum and are allowed to deny sanctuary to any whose claims prove unfounded. The government also has the right already to deny entry to anyone with a violent criminal record. A federal judge earlier this month ruled that President Trump acted illegally when he indicated asylum claims would not be processed, since this violates international law protecting those who ask asylum, whether at a border checkpoint or anywhere in between. Yet the president has still refused to allow migrants to submit their claims lawfully at border crossings, meeting the migrants instead with tear gas. Homeland Security has contended that about 500 of the 7,000 migrant caravan members have criminal records, but the agency has not disclosed exactly how it knows this, nor the nature of the supposed crimes, which potentially could be only misdemeanors or history of being previously deported for crossing the border as an undocumented immigrant. Trump has asked Mexico to allow migrants to stay there, but thus far, the Mexican government has not agreed. Many of the migrants say they fled their homelands in Central America due to gang violence and death threats against them or their children. Homeland Security contends that some migrants turned violent on Sunday, hurling rocks at agents and, in one case, lighting a tree on fire in a failed attempt to escape capture after trying to cross the border illegally. Meanwhile, the plight of some has been equally desperate in Mexico. Joseph Garcia, one of the Central American caravan members, told Reuters, "They want us to wait in Mexico. But I, for one, am desperate. My little girl is sick, and I don't even have money for milk. I want to work, but they haven't given me papers." One desperate woman who attempted to climb the fence on Saturday with her two small children fell and was impaled on rebar, though she is expected to survive, and face deportation. Military troops sent to the border by President Trump spent the days prior to the confrontation reinforcing the border fence with razor wire, similar to that atop the Berlin Wall, which formerly separated East and West Berlin in Germany. The migrants here have been met with mixed reactions in Mexico, welcomed by some who have offered help, but also sparking protests from other Mexicans. Similarly, on the U.S. side of the border, protesters on both sides of the issue have been vocal. Some have pointed up the tragic irony of the U.S. government using force against would-be immigrants on Thanksgiving weekend, a holiday that celebrates Native Americans, welcoming European immigrants and sharing a feast with them long ago. Reporting on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's weather report. The first substantial winter storm of the season is predicted for this week. The National Weather Service is forecasting rainfall of up to 2 inches, plus snow in the mountains Wednesday through Sunday, with the heaviest precipitation likely on Thursday. Elevated fire conditions will continue through Tuesday until the storm sweeps in, and fog is expected early Wednesday morning in the valley areas. The storm will also bring high surf and hazardous conditions along the shore later this week, with coastal flooding and beach erosion expected. And over the weekend, gusty west winds in the mountains, deserts, and coastal waters are predicted.
Citizens in the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District have secured enough validated signatures to put an initiative on the ballot asking voters to decide whether to save the county's last all-volunteer firefighting district. A special election will be held on March 11th. If over 50% of voters vote yes on the citizens' initiative, it will reverse a decision made by the county's Local Agency Formation Commission, or LAFCO, to dissolve the district and transfer all firefighting duties to the County Fire Authority, run by Cal Fire. The citizens' initiative comes after Julian residents invoked their right to protest the LAFCO takeover, securing signatures from 26% of district voters to force a public vote on the takeover. The county has argued that the takeover would improve fire safety in the area, but many residents and volunteer firefighters report but since the county began rolling out the takeover in June, some fire stations have been closed many days, and response times to emergencies in some areas have increased. Some residents have also complained of bias and conflicts of interest involving some members of the district's board of directors. A November 13th meeting of the fire district's board was canceled due to lack of a quorum after board members Jack Shelver, Ada Tucker, and Kirsten Stalin failed to show up. The three no-show board members did not seek re-election, but three new board members were elected, Mike Benghini, Eva Hatch, and Pat Landis. Landis says the new board will meet on December 11th and is optimistic that the new members' plans will motivate the community to vote to save its fire department. Reporting from Julian on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The new owner of Cottonwood Golf Club in Rancho San Diego wants to turn the site into a sand mine along the Sweetwater River over the next 10 years. If approved, the project would mine an estimated 5.8 million tons of sand from 190 acres of the 280-acre site. A community meeting for concerned residents is planned for this Wednesday, November 28th at 6 p.m. at the Rancho San Diego Library in El Cajon. The project would generate 170 truck round trips daily. That's 21 trucks every hour on Willow Glen Drive, starting as early as 4 a.m. Serious traffic, noise, health, safety, and environmental concerns have alarmed many neighbors. The property's owner, Michael Schlesinger of Los Angeles, acquired Cottonwood after its prior owner filed for bankruptcy. Schlesinger has hired EnviroMine as a mining and environmental consultant for the project. EnviroMine estimates that Schlesinger could make $40 million off sand mining to meet needs for road building across San Diego County, which has a shortage of sand and aggregate. Nearby property owners were sent notices about the proposed project on November 19th, though the county has been aware of the plan since at least April, when a pre-application meeting with the developer was held. In early November, county staff outlined key concerns, including questions of compatibility with the county's general plan, impacts on community character in the largely residential neighborhood, and the fact that the golf course had been designated as a buffer zone between sensitive habitats and developed areas. Although the project has not yet been approved, the owner has already allowed turf at one of Cottonwood's golf courses to die out and drained an artificial pond that for years served as an oasis for wildlife, including deer, mountain lion, and many other animals seen on the greens after hours. According to a draft report prepared by EnviroMine for Schlesinger, the proposal calls for restoring the site to open space after mining is completed in 10 years, with restoration taking another 2 years to complete 12 years from now. The Cottonwood Sand Mining Site abuts Sweetwater National Wildlife Refuge downstream from the proposed mining location. The proposed mining site is surrounded by homes, several schools, Native American lands, and businesses that could all be negatively impacted by traffic, noise, air pollution, and water quality issues, among other concerns. Wildlife biologist Renee Owens told East County Magazine that the Cottonwood project raises hazards similar to those posed by a proposed sand mining project in Lakeside's El Monte Valley. She says, "The way these guys try and sell these mining projects is by claiming there is a terribly urgent need for sand and that restoration will be amazing. Wrong on both counts." Owens concludes, adding, "They also ignore the health problems of valley fever and the toxins released from on-site washing of the sand." Residents are gearing up to fight the project. Over 100 neighbors turned out at a recent Valle de Oro Planning Group meeting to share their concerns earlier this month. Some voiced concerns over safety of children walking or bicycling to school. Others fear the project would reduce property values and cause environmental degradation. Now, residents opposed to the project have established a website, stopcottonwoodsandmine.com, where you can sign up for notifications on future meetings, get links to contact decision makers, and view project documents, which are also available through the county. The Valle de Oro Planning Group can only cast advisory votes. Ultimately, the project will be voted on by the county's planning commission, with the county board of supervisors having the final say. Residents concerned about the proposed Cottonwood sand mine are advised to send letters to members of all three of these boards, including newly elected members slated to take office in January. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is John Fistier with a health report. The U.S. Center for Disease Control has issued a warning advising consumers not to eat any form of romaine lettuce, including whole heads, chopped lettuce, or mixed salads containing romaine lettuce, such as spring mix and Caesar salads. Restaurants and retailers should not serve or sell any forms of romaine. The warning is due to a nationwide outbreak of E. coli that has sickened 32 people in 11 states, including 10 cases in California. Nearly a third of those cases required hospitalization. The E. coli outbreak has been tied to romaine lettuce consumption, but so far, authorities have not been able to narrow it down to a single source. If you have any romaine products, you're advised to throw them away. If you're uncertain what type of lettuce is in a salad, do not eat it. Health authorities also recommend washing and sanitizing refrigerator drawers and shelves where romaine was stored. Contact your doctor if you have symptoms of an E. coli infection, such as stomach cramps, vomiting, or diarrhea. Medical professionals are advised not to give antibiotics to patients diagnosed with or suspected of having this strain of E. coli, because antibiotics can increase the risk of kidney failure. If you're diagnosed with E. coli, notify the health department and advise them of anything you ate in the week before you became ill to help investigators identify the cause of the E. coli outbreak.
This is Jonathan Goetz with a health report. An experimental treatment for people with peanut allergies is having dramatic results in two-thirds of children who participated in a landmark study, the New England Journal of Medicine reports. The study was presented at the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology's annual scientific meeting. Peanut allergies affect about 3 million Americans, CNN reports, and they can be life-threatening. In severe cases, victims can suffer anaphylactic shock with their airways swelling shut after merely being exposed to peanut aromas without even eating any peanuts or peanut butter products. The problem is particularly hard for children who may be exposed to a life-threatening reaction via peanut butter sandwiches brought to school by other students. To avoid this, youngsters may be forced to eat separately from others and their classmates advised to avoid bringing foods containing peanuts. Though an EpiPen may deliver a life-saving dose of epinephrine during a severe reaction, there are currently no treatments to prevent allergic reactions. The new experimental treatment by Aimmune Therapies, Inc. in California does not make allergies go away, but it does reduce the severity of reactions. The treatment was tested on 554 patients, including 496 children, at 66 research centers in 10 nations. Half the patients received a placebo, and the other half received the actual treatment. Participants were able to take oral immunotherapy capsules containing peanut powder in a hospital setting, with the dosage gradually increasing to allow the body to build up resistance over 2 weeks. Later, they were given treatments at home. After a year, they received the equivalent of 2 peanuts per dose, which two-thirds of the patients were able to tolerate without a severe reaction. A third had mild reactions, such as stomach cramps. But slightly more than 11% had to drop out of the study due to severe effects. The manufacturer is now seeking FDA approval to make it available more broadly, under doctors' careful supervision. It must be used daily during the desensitization process and can't be taken before exercising, so parents must closely monitor their children's activities. But for patients whose only option now for preventing life-threatening allergic reactions is to try and avoid peanuts and peanut products pervasive in restaurants, airplanes, schools, and other places, the new therapy offers hope for peace of mind in the future. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Goetz.
The County of San Diego has some tips for holiday shoppers to help you avoid being accidentally overcharged by faulty price scanners or cash registers. Every year, the county's Department of Agriculture weights and measures inspects more than 1,500 local businesses, checking price scanning devices, scales that charge items by weight, and other equipment that set prices to make sure they are charging customers accurately. But even the best businesses have occasional overcharges. Between January and October, almost one out of every 10 stores inspected had overcharge errors, and the average overcharge was $1.85. An extra couple of bucks may not sound alarming, but in the holiday shopping season, even tiny overcharges can add up to make big dents in your wallet or pocketbook. Always check your receipts and immediately notify store management of any price discrepancies. Stores are required to display the price of an item as you are buying it before the transaction is complete. Watch the display screen as your items are scanned. Stores cannot legally charge more than their lowest advertised, posted, or quoted price. You can also download and use the county's Tell Us Now app to contact Agriculture, Weights and Measures, or report overcharges that you can't resolve with a store by calling the AWM department at 1-888-TRUE-SCAN. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is John Fisteer.
When Gavin Newsom is sworn in as California's governor in January, he'll be starting out on a strong footing. The state has nearly $30 billion in combined reserves and unexpected tax revenues, the legislative analyst's office just reported, stating, by historical standards, the surplus is extraordinary. So even though Newsom also starts his reign with a two-thirds supermajority of Democrats in both the Assembly and Senate, capable of raising taxes without a single Republican vote, it's unlikely that the new governor will ask the legislature to do so, CalMatters reports. Credit for the extraordinary surplus is due mainly to outgoing Governor Jerry Brown, who started his tenure 8 years ago facing a $27 billion budget deficit, so bad that some experts feared the state might not stay solvent. Brown was blocked by Republicans from efforts to increase taxes to balance the budget, so Brown then got approval from voters through ballot measures to raise income taxes mainly on people earning $1 million a year or more. Those revenues now account for over $100 billion projected in the coming fiscal year. That's 71% of the revenue flowing into the state's general fund to finance programs ranging from schools to health care. While revenues have risen, spending has leveled off for several reasons. Schools have experienced declining enrollment as the state's population ages. With property values rising, property tax revenues have doubled in the past 8 years. Healthcare costs, though still rising, are forecast to increase at only half the rate as last year, since Brown's successful push to enroll poor people in Medi-Cal means the vast majority of eligible recipients are already signed up. Brown also wielded his veto power judiciously, sometimes frustrating liberal legislators by vetoing spending bills for various proposals. Despite the optimistic outlook, budget experts recall the dot-com crash back in 2000, which caused anticipated revenues to plummet, taking the state from a $10 billion surplus to a $12 billion deficit in just 1 year. The state also faces formidable costs of fighting wildfires and aiding in disaster recovery. Some legislators have voiced eagerness to push for popular programs to help more Californians, from an ambitious universal health care program to public ownership of utilities. California has long led the nation on areas such as combating climate change and environmental protection. But while sweeping reforms may have broad appeal, Newsom may be wise to use caution, keeping most of that $30 billion surplus built up since the last recession and saving it for the proverbial rainy day. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Goetz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
The holiday season in East County has many fun and festive events coming up, including North Pole Limited Train Rides in Campo, the Spirit of Christmas in Lakeside, Ramona's Tree Lighting with Sleigh Rides, outdoor ice skating at Viejas, the Alpine Parade of Lights and Snow Festival, La Mesa's Holiday in the Village, Breakfast with Santa in Alpine, San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra's Christmas Concert, and more.
Plus, there are even more happenings this season, including concerts by such stellar performers as Fleetwood Mac, Leanne Rimes, Barry Manilow, Tony Orlando and the Kingston Trio, a radio production of It's a Wonderful Life, a comedy appearance by Trevor Noah, and a swingin' holiday party with Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
You're invited to swing into your holiday season at the Poway Center for the Performing Arts on Friday, November 30th at 8 p.m. with Big Bad Voodoo Daddy's Wild and Swingin' Holiday Party. So break out the zoot suits and swing dance dresses to take a step back in time to the 40s and 50s. The High Energy Group has appeared in concert venues across the world, sold millions of records, and had their music in hundreds of movies and television shows, revitalizing jazz and swing music to bring joy to audiences around the world. For tickets and more information, visit powwayonstage.com.
The famous North Pole Limited returns to celebrate the holiday season at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo. Aboard the historic 1920s train, Santa's elves will sing Christmas carols, read a popular holiday story, pass out cookies and hot chocolate to all, and then stop at Santa's workshop to pick up Santa and Mrs. Claus. Advance tickets are recommended, as this popular attraction often sells out. Arrive at the Campo Depot at least 45 minutes early, and be sure to stop by the hobo camp next to the depot to hear tales from railroading's past before boarding. The North Pole Limited train will run Fridays and Saturdays, November 30th through December 22nd. For ticket options and information, you can visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org. You can visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
The Ramona Chamber of Commerce invites you to Ramona's 26th annual Christmas tree lighting and celebrations on December 1st from 5 to 8 p.m. Main Street will come alive with over 1,000 Ramona residents out to celebrate the Christmas season on Saturday, when shops will stay open late. Main Street will be closed to through traffic for sleigh rides, a classic car show, Santa, and the lighting of the annual Christmas tree in front of the Guy B. Woodward Museum at 6 p.m. There will be a DJ, local entertainment, carolers, and crafters. For more information, visit RamonaChamber.com and click on the Events tab at the top.
The Lakeside Chamber of Commerce hosts Spirit of Christmas on December 1st along the town's main avenue from 3:30 to 8:30 p.m. There will be entertainment, food, games, crafts, Santa Claus, and lighting of a community tree to celebrate the season. For more information, visit the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce website at lakesidechamber.org.
The largest outdoor skating rink in Southern California is open now through January 6th at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine. Rental skates are available. In addition to ice skating, visitors can enjoy holiday entertainment and a seasonal water show. For more information, visit viejas.com.
Pickwick Players in Santee will present It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play opening November 30th and running through December 15th. The production recounts the classic story of George Bailey's Christmas Eve, when the depressed man is visited by a guardian angel who shows him the lives he has touched and then shows him how different his community of Bedford Falls would have been without him. On opening night, a champagne reception will also be held. For tickets, you can visit pickwickplayers.net.
Singer Tony Orlando will perform at Saquon's Live and Up Close Theater on November 30th at 8 p.m. The Grammy nominee celebrates 5 decades of endearing entertainment, including 5 hit records, Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree, Knock 3 Times, Candida, My Sweet Gypsy Rose, and He Don't Love You Like I Love You. Tie a Yellow Ribbon was the #1 Billboard song of 1973 and became Orlando's theme song. For tickets, you can visit Saquon.com.
The 23rd annual Alpine Village Parade of Lights and Snow Festival offers Santa, snow sledding, and fun for the whole family on December 7th. The parade begins at Alpine Boulevard and West Victoria Drive at 6 p.m. and ends at the Alpine Creek Town Center. Organized by the Alpine Mountain Empire Chamber of Commerce, the parade features floats and other entries all aglow with holiday lights. The snow festival features real snow, with a sledding hill as well as vendor booths, children's activities, and more. For additional information, or to sign up to enter the parade, you can visit alpinechamber.com.
The La Mesa Village Association will present Holiday in the Village, December 7th and 8th. You're invited to stroll through the streets of La Mesa's historic downtown to enjoy live music and dance, cozy fires, craft vendors, food, a kids' area with holiday movies and activities. There will also be fire pits, caroling, and more in the spirit of the season. Find more information at LaMesaVillageAssociation.org.
Fleetwood Mac, one of the world's best-selling bands, will be live in concert at the Viejas Arena at San Diego State University on December 8th at 8 p.m. The stellar British rock group, known for hits such as Black Magic Woman, still includes its two original title members, Mick Fleetwood and John McVie, along with some new talent. The band has sold over 100 million records worldwide, as well as winning an Emmy Award and induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame since its inception 50 years ago. For tickets, you can visit Ticketmaster.com.
You're invited to bring the kids and savor breakfast with Santa at the Alpine Community Center on Saturday, December 8th, from 9 to 11 a.m. Each child will receive a gift from Santa. There will also be holiday crafts for kids. Every child will receive a gift from Santa. There will also be holiday crafts for kids. Proceeds benefit the Alpine Community Center. Tickets are available at alpinecommunitycenter.com.
The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present its annual Christmas concert on Sunday, December 9th at 3 p.m. in the College Avenue Baptist Church. The program opens with the St. Cecilia Mass, written in honor of the patron saint of music, St. Cecilia. The second half of the program features a selection of seasonal music ranging from traditional carols to new settings of old favorites to some less familiar Christmas songs. For tickets and details, you can visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
Singer Barry Manilow will present a Barry Merry Christmas concert December 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Viejas Arena at San Diego State University. The winner of a Grammy Award and a Tony Award for Broadway appearances, Manilow began his career singing duets with Bette Midler and jingles for McDonald's commercials before gaining fame as a solo performer. He is best known for hit songs such as Mandy, I Write the Songs, and Copacabana. For tickets, visit the Viejas Arena website.
The youngest singer ever to win a Grammy and also be nominated by the Academy of Country Music, Leanne Rimes, will be live on stage at the Oak Ballroom at Viejas Casino and Resort on Friday, December 14th at 8 p.m. With a string of hits throughout her career, she is best known for her signature song, Blue. For tickets and details, you can visit Viejas.com and click on their entertainment option.
Comedian and author Trevor Noah brings his Loud and Clear tour to the Viejas Arena at San Diego State University on December 15th. The host of Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, known for his humorous take on politics, is also the author of Afraid of the Dark and Born a Crime, his memoir. The title references his birth to a mixed-race couple in South Africa, a crime under apartheid rule at the time. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, November the 26th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. The U.S. fires tear gas as some migrants attempt to cross the southern border. Also on the Monday rundown, farmers wary about 2019, given the ongoing trade war. Plus, a freed Kentucky death row inmate shares his story. First, our top story, U.S. border agents fired tear gas on hundreds of migrants protesting near the border with Mexico on Sunday. Yahoo News reports that action was taken after some of them attempted to get through the fencing and wire separating the two countries. American authorities shut down border crossings from Tijuana, where thousands are waiting to apply for asylum. Yahoo quotes Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen as saying, U.S. authorities will continue to have a robust presence along the southwest border. She added that DHS will not tolerate this type of lawlessness and will not hesitate to shut down ports of entry for security and public safety reasons. Concerns about 2019 are growing as the U.S. trade war continues to hurt farmers. More from Eric Tegenoff.
Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue has said he's confident farmers can plan ahead for market conditions. But this year, the U.S.'s largest agricultural export, soybean, is down 98% to China, the crop's largest importer. Mark Watney, head of the North Dakota Farmers Union, says that makes it hard to know what the future holds for many producers. He says farmers rotate their crops for better yields and to control disease, typically between corn and soybeans, which means leaving out soybeans also will affect corn.
Just to suggest that being soybeans is low, we all switch to another crop and everything's magical, it doesn't work that way. We tend to flood those other markets and we lower those prices. And then we have the same scenario playing out where we're planting something that doesn't make any money.
The Trump administration created a $12 billion emergency aid program this summer to help farmers caught in the middle of the country's escalating trade war. $6 billion of that aid was made available in September, and the other half is expected to be available next month. Purdue says it's unlikely more aid will be made available after that.
And 1,800 miles separate Iowa from California, but a law passed by voters there could affect how many Iowa eggs are sold in the Golden State 4 years from now.
At the polls this month, voters approved a measure that requires all eggs sold in California come from cage-free hens by 2022. As the nation's largest egg producer, Iowa will need to make big changes to comply. Cody Carlson with the group Mercy for Animals says the overwhelming support for California's Proposition 12 confirms that many Americans no longer want to eat eggs from battery-caged hens.
The demand for cage-free eggs is exploding nationwide. In the last 7 years, the sale of non-organic cage-free eggs has gone up by about 500%. So they're available really wherever you are these days in mainstream supermarkets.
Major retailers, including Walmart and McDonald's, have pledged to switch to cage-free eggs in the next decade. I'm Roz Brown.
More than eggs will be affected. The measure approved by voters also bans the sale of pork and veal in California from farm animals raised in cages that don't meet the state's minimum size requirements. And finally, Mary Sherman reports convicted of a crime he didn't commit. Gary Drinkard spent 6 years on death row before the truth was revealed.
Drinkard was sentenced to death for a 1993 Alabama murder and was eventually exonerated due to prosecutorial misconduct. He may be a free man now, but Drinkard explains the capital murder conviction shattered his relationships with his family and have made it difficult to find a decent job.
The cost of it overall extremely outweighs keeping a person in prison for life. And like one of our members said, you can release a man from jail, but you can't dig him out of the grave, an innocent person. And there's a lot more innocent people on death row. I mean, people don't realize it. There are.
Total of 164 people in the U.S. have been exonerated from death row, including Larry Osborne of Kentucky. Drinkard speaks at 7 p.m. at the Mother of Good Counsel Catholic Church in Hazard. As a volunteer with Kentucky Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, Helen Brunty points out just 30 states used the death penalty, down from 37 in 2004.
We're moving away from the death penalty across the United States, and studies indicate that the elimination of the death penalty actually reduces crime rather than the opposite. It's a cruel and unusual punishment. There is no humane way to kill somebody.
More than 2,700 people are on death row in U.S. prisons, including more than 30 in the state of Kentucky. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week, newsing and cruising with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guest is Bernard Morisilla. He goes by Bernie, and he's a La Mesa resident and the Vice President of Development at the Shawnee Foundation, which has a mission to fund meaningful projects that enhance the lives of children, kids, and young adults affected by cancer. Bernie, welcome to the show.
Well, Miriam, thank you very much for having us. We really appreciate it. It's a great time to be able to actually sit down and speak to people more about just what goes on within our everyday realm of pediatric cancer and what resources and support systems groups like the Shawnee Foundation and Camp Reach for the Sky really offer to community members.
It's wonderful. It sounds like you're doing great work. Tell our listeners how the Shawnee Foundation got started.
So the Shawnee Foundation started about 10 years ago after the passing of Sean Lewis Robbins, who is the namesake of the foundation itself. So he and his father had actually started the foundation. He was battling Ewing sarcoma, which is a rare pediatric cancer. And really, he epitomizes sort of what the battle is within childhood cancer as a whole, from the impact that it had on his siblings to the impact it had on himself as a patient, his parents, his surrounding community, to be able to really sort of see it through his lens and view and to have the foresight to start a foundation that would be put together to actually help other kids not have to go through the same battle that he did is very important. And for taking on a program like Camp Reach for the Sky, which had been in place already, has been around for 35 years, that's a big, bold jump and move to make sure that we continue to provide those opportunities for kids that are struggling with this diagnosis.
And I understand that it was his wish that, even though he didn't make it, that other children benefit through this program.
Exactly, and I think that's a big piece of it. When you look at the child who's actually going through it, they look a lot more at how they can help others themselves as well. You know, they're going through a process of trying to figure out what the day-to-day is, but they're constantly thinking about the people that surround them, of how they may be able to take care of them. And I think this was his way of putting something together that he felt would continue to be a lifelong resource for other kids who were inevitably going to go through some sort of diagnosis when it came to cancer.
Tell us about your own background before you joined the foundation.
Yeah. So I'm a San Diego native. I grew up in Mira Mesa. My buddy Robbie Medina, who's also our COO, when we were in high school playing baseball together, that's when he was diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, and even at that point, I had no idea what really was going on within the cancer community. I had family members that had been diagnosed, but nothing to the extent where I knew programs like this were available and existed. And so it wasn't until we reconnected after college where he got me involved as a sibling camp counselor while I was working with him at the American Cancer Society. And at the point where I became a sibling camp counselor, it really started to come into place of the fact that I wanted to see how we could take something like this and make sure that this isn't one of those silent resources. This can't be the best kept secret in San Diego.
Tell us about Shawnee's Camp Reach for the Sky and other camp programs that you offer.
Yeah, so Shawnee's Camp Reach for the Sky is our flagship program. So it consists right now of six sessions, and each one has their own sort of background and group. Now, you have the week-long summer sessions, which consist of day camp, which is for kids between the ages of 4 to 8 years old. Now, the day camp actually is fun because we do it in partnership with the Girl Scout camp in Balboa Park. And that one's great because it's kids just being kids. They are a combination of kids in treatment, in remission, or siblings, and those siblings may be bereaved as well. And then you have sibling camp, which is solely for the siblings. So for kids between the ages of 8 and 17, they're able to go out and find their own tribe. You know, the siblings are always considered the sort of the lost child within this whole process,
yeah,
because they get put on the back burner.
And some of the camps are in the mountains of East County, I understand.
Correct, yeah. So we partner with a lot of groups like YMCA Camp Whispering Winds, Camp Cedar Glen. There's YMCA Camp Marston and Camp Braintree Ranch.
Up in Julian,
yeah. And so it's a great way to get the kids outside of the hospital system, outside of the home where it may be a little chaotic with the diagnosis as well, and just simply be a kid again.
Very good. Can you give us an idea of how many kids and how many school districts and so forth have been helped since this program began, since Shawnee's Foundation began?
Yeah, so thus far, so with Camp Reach for the Sky being around for 35 years, we've had more than 20,000 kids go through this program. Now, this year we had 529 kids and campers that actually went through our camp program. So to be able to actually to see that type of impact, that's really what you want to see. You want to be able to know that these resources are available. And the fact that the program has been around this long and has the background of volunteer leadership and people who know what they're doing, who can replicate success over and over again, it means that these kids and families have a much larger support system than they would have ever realized.
Now, you have other programs, too. Tell us about the CARES Initiative.
Yeah, the CARES Initiative is a new initiative that we just came up with last year. In this one in particular, we actually teamed up with Leukemia Lymphoma Society of San Diego and Hawaii Chapter to offer a deep dive into the mental health issues that kids and families are going through when they have a pediatric cancer diagnosis. So we covered things like PTSD and PTSS in parents. We talked about suicide and depression ideations in our kids. We've talked about infertility issues when it comes to kids who are of the AYA population, which is adolescent and young adult population. So we're really taking the steps to dive into these issues that we get the input and feedback from our current population of campers of the things that are their pain points, things that are keeping them up at night. So we have to be able to dive in. We don't sweep anything under the rug.
Excellent. That's so important for these young people. Now, I understand that you also have some fun activities for them, which is also important. Tell us about those.
Oh, I mean, you know, when you look at the events that we have, things like our gala, our golf tournament, our movie nights. In fact, we just had a movie night for Fantastic Beasts. We have Shawnee's Day Out. We have a bowling night. We have social hours for the parents and for the kids. You know, it's meant to be an extension of this camp community, but giving people the opportunity as a true community and as a family to get together again outside of the camp, to just reconnect, to feel like themselves for a little bit, to grab a little piece of that normalcy back into their lives. That's really what's lost when you have a cancer diagnosis. It's a new normal, and that new normal is very difficult to navigate your way through. So by being able to provide events that allow kids to just be kids and gives parents the ability to just breathe for a minute, that makes a massive impact on their overall quality of life.
Yeah, a lot of these kids have their education interrupted. Suddenly they're not in school anymore. Mm-hmm. They're going through chemo and they have individual education plans. Do you mm-hmm. assist them with that as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we do a lot when it comes to education. We have a specific program called Teen Winter Weekend in which we take our teen population. You know, this population essentially has had all of their aspirations and goals and interests put on a holding pattern due to the cancer diagnosis. And we go in and work with experts from places like University of San Diego, the San Diego Unified School District, people who are CEOs and leadership levels at Fortune 500 companies within San Diego. We try and gauge what their interests are and figure out how we can help them kick a door down and connect them and match them with people who will give them that time and that effort to mentor them and to give them a chance of seeing sort of what these areas of interest are and what they look like on a day-to-day. And that, at the very least, is something that we can do for this population of kids who's driven to go out there and succeed. And we have to put them in positions where they can go out there and do it.
Fabulous. You also invest in clinical research programs at Children's Hospital through the Shawnee Foundation. And research is something where, over the long term, if there's a bright spot here, it's that the research is really making a difference. From 1969 to 2008, the death rate from childhood cancer has gone down by 66%. That's huge. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about some of the trials that Shawnee Foundation is funding currently?
Yeah, so when it comes to long-term research and science, so research and science is extremely important to us because that's what our kids benefit from. But at the same time, we have to be able to make this investment in quality of life on the day-to-day. Within our research areas that we've had a specific focus are things that have been tied to Ewing sarcoma, which obviously Sean had a background with. And even as we continue moving forward with some of the research institutions of looking deeper into what are the family issues that are coming up on the psychosocial side, how can we play a major role in being able to open up those discussions and fund specific initiatives that really tackle the emotional trauma that cancer has on a family? So scientifically, being able to look at things specific to a specific type of sarcoma, whether it's bench science, whatever the case may be, through one of the many institutions that San Diego has, but also then backing that up with the fact that we need to be able to talk what long-term latent impacts are when it comes to a child that's been diagnosed and how we're going to be their support system long-term. So being able to tackle that psychosocial impact by whatever means necessary is critical to our success.
You have some interesting programs coming up in the coming year. Can we get some details about the Get Well Soon retreat in January and what that's all about?
Yeah, the Get Well Soon retreat, that's a fun one. You know, it's something new, and that's sort of the fun part of being a smaller size nonprofit. We're like a startup. So the Get Well Soon is January 26th. It's going to be at the Soledad Club, and this is our way of venturing into an area that we just feel is very important. And we've gotten this feedback specifically from our parents and from our kids. They were looking for opportunities in which they could talk more about what's going on within integrative medicine. Talk more about, well, what are the positive benefits when it comes to yoga, meditation, health and wellness. We actually started a wellness committee about a year ago.
I actually used to be the editor of a national publication, trade publication, that covered the integrative medicine industry, and it was amazing the difference some of that stuff can make.
It's giving every single person as many tools as they can to figure out individually how they're going to be able to navigate this new normal in this journey of cancer. And I think to be able to put these things at the forefront and have this discussion is really imperative, because it allows people to feel more comfortable about what's going on and to have an idea of the additional resources and support systems that are available.
That's great. Do you do anything to educate the families or the community at large, for that matter, about cancer prevention, things like healthy eating or ways that the ways that we can reduce the risk of this occurring?
Great question. Yeah, so in terms of being able to provide a support system on that level of being able to educate folks on the impact of health and wellness, we started about a year and a half ago now a wellness committee that's driven by a couple of our parents as volunteer leaders, as well as some of our board members and people that were tied to our population that really want to take a deeper look of finding ways to create systemic change when it comes to overall health and wellness between these families. Now, in particular, these two parents have done a great job of actually transforming their families' eating patterns, habits, their exercise and activity levels, and taking it from a perspective of, you know, we've been through this challenge, what steps can we take to make subtle changes that may work out much better in the long term? And so to use that as people who have actually been through it, who are doing it, who know all the struggles that you're going to go through trying to create some of these sort of changes, it's
sure.
Things
like, you know, reducing exposure to chemicals, using maybe non-toxic household cleaners, and avoiding, you know, spraying the yard with pesticides every time you see a bug or some of those kind of things, you know, trying not to live too close to areas that might have contamination of some sort.
It's just being an overall larger awareness. And I think that's when you look at programs like the Get Well Soon, that's what we're trying, and the CARES Initiative. We're trying to jump into those conversations, just everyone having a much larger awareness of what's going on and what decisions they can make.
Very good. We talked about the Get Well Soon retreat. What other events do you have coming up in 2019?
So in March, March 23rd is I believe it's our 11th gala, which will be a sort of Havana Nights theme over at the El Cortez Hotel.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, so it actually should be a great time. It's actually our largest fundraiser that we have every single year. And this is a fun way for families to come and community members to get together, to go out and truly fund and support the programs that we do. We have a golf tournament that's coming up in May. We have a 5K that'll be happening in October. September is always Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, in which we do a ton of awareness activities. Right now, we're in the middle of a 35 and Thrive campaign, which is tied to Giving Tuesday. Giving Tuesday is actually November 27th. And our message within this is the fact that our programs have been around for 35 years now, and they've allowed families of every single level to thrive within what this discussion of cancer is. How do we find the way to make sure that we continue to be around for another 35 years? So events like these really sort of rally around the cause, and they allow people to understand that in order for us to continue to make these programs free, we have to be able to do events like this that raise the awareness and the resources so that no family has to worry about any additional costs when it comes to the cancer diagnosis that they've just gotten.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we are speaking with Bernard Mauricio, who goes by Bernie. He is a La Mesa resident who's the Vice President of Development at the Shawnee Foundation, and that's spelled S-E-A-N-Y Foundation, which is devoted to helping children and young people with childhood cancers. Bernie, what kind of help do you need? For people that are listening that maybe want to get involved, what can they do and where can they go to get more information?
It's a great question. When it comes to helping and groups like ours, it always will come down to, especially when you're a small-scale nonprofit, it comes down to time, treasure, and talent. Every single time. And that's an investment for people. And I think that's, you know, we're very transparent when it comes to this stuff. We need to be able to make the resources available so that we can continuously offer these programs for free. And for people, the community members, to be able to donate that time, treasure, and talent, it's imperative within our overall success. So we are always looking for volunteers. And whether it's people who are volunteering at our camp sessions, whether it's event volunteers, whether it's people who have an expertise in a certain area that we can just use for other programming. Treasure, yeah. Every donation makes a difference. And I don't care whether it's a dollar, whether it's $5, whether it's 15,000, whatever the case may be, to be able to put those resources together so that a family who really is in dire need of a program like this doesn't have to worry about an additional cost, we have to do that. And talent to be able to offer those additional resources. Each one of us has our own specific talents that we're good at, that is our comfort zone. To be able to share that with a group like ours and a nonprofit, it makes us a stronger base and a foundation because it allows us to just truly pull those resources and those talent levels into bigger and broader initiatives.
Well, you're doing amazing work and helping so many kids. If you tuned in late again, listeners, the camps alone help 20,000 kids over 35 years. So they helped 529 kids in the last year alone. That's a lot. If listeners want to get involved, if they want to donate, volunteer, they have some time and talent to help out, or maybe someone listening has a child or a family member that's suffering from cancer and wants to learn about the free camps and some of the other resources you offer, where can they find more information, Bernie?
To learn more about the Shawnee Foundation and find out about our programs, our events, any resources that are available, the easiest way is to go to www.theshawneefoundation.org, and Shawnee is spelled S-E-A-N-Y. Now, within that site is where you'll find links to videos, and these videos give you a much larger and broader sense of what these programs are all about. You'll see videos on kids at camp, recap videos from a lot of the activities that they're doing, videos that actually show you what the family camps and Ryan Strong look like. You'll also see different sets of information of how to get involved as a volunteer, how to fill out your application. If you have a child who's going through it, all of our information will be there in terms of being that support system for you to walk you through the process of getting your family involved. Now, most families get a lot of their information, especially when it comes to the pediatric cancer diagnosis, from the local pediatric hospital systems that we are tied to. So we work very closely with Rady's, Kaiser's Pediatric Unit, Naval Medical, but even adult oncology like Scripps Network and Sharp. So you can find that information through your social workers and those institutions, but our website, www.theshawneefoundation.org, should have all that information that you're looking for, and we'll have all of our contact info. So do not hesitate. Call us, and we will make sure to get you going on whatever it is that you need.
And what is the phone number if someone out there doesn't have internet access?
And so our phone number is 858-551-0922.
Great. Bernie, I'm going to let you have the final word today. What else would you like our listeners to know about the Shawnee Foundation?
Miriam, I think the biggest thing is the fact that it takes programs like this and it takes the community members who are listening to this show right now to make a big change and be a change catalyst on what we're talking about when it comes to pediatric cancer and cancer as a whole, to be quite honest. We have to be able to go out there and advocate for these kids who just want to be kids and for a parent that just wants to be able to breathe for a little bit. So to be able to promote and advocate for quality of life programs and mental health programs like the ones that we push to make sure that families are able to have the tools and resources to support them through their cancer journey. That's what we have to do as a community. So we hope that should you ever need us for anything, that we're there for you. And to please make sure that this conversation doesn't just stay here, that you actually promote it within all your circles of influence to make sure that we're no longer that best kept secret in the area. Make sure people know about us and that they're able to push that information out there.
Very good. And if you tuned in late, driving, missed part of the interview, we will be posting the full interview on eastcountymagazine.org. I want to thank you so much, Bernie, for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio, the network for social justice.
Thanks again.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.